Demons running around in my head, and they feed on insecurities I have. Won't you lay your
chapter two
healing hands on my chest, let your ritual clean, soak the ropes with your holy water.
They bring out an electro whip, and Obi-Wan sighs. You could at least try to be original. He's not sure it comes out intelligible between the blood pooling in his mouth and his inability to draw a full breath, but something of his tone must come across because he gets a fist in the gut. He wheezes through it and tries to release the pain to the Force. It mostly works. Kind of. It's been a day and a half, he thinks, as the whip comes down. They traveled that whole first night and into the morning. Obi-Wan and Jango strapped to speeders and kept groggy with sedatives to reach this camp, and Obi-Wan thinks it's only been a little over a day since then. He thinks it's the afternoon of the second day. He's pretty sure. What he's not sure about is what the Death Watch is trying to accomplish by herding Obi-Wan in front of Jango. They're not asking Jango questions. They're not mining for information about the true Mandalorian's plans. They're just waiting for Pre Vizsla, who was apparently off-planet somewhere, to arrive and do whatever he wants to Jango. And they're amusing themselves in the meantime by... Obi-Wan steers his thoughts away. Putting words to it makes it more real than he may be able to cope with. The whip comes down again, blazing lines of fire across his shoulders. A noise tears out of him, pitiful and raw. The thing about releasing pain to the Force is that you have to be able to focus long enough to do it, and focus is a big ask of Obi-Wan at the moment. Being tortured is very distracting, and being tortured in front of Jango Fett is particularly distracting. And there's also the fact that he's exhausted down to the marrow of his bones, but can't sleep. Because if he sleeps, he'll lose hold of the thread of Force he's currently using to keep his ribs from going through his lung. He's known since Adonai Kreese was killed that he might die on Mandalore. Since even before that, maybe, when it first started to become clear that the conflict between factions on this planet wasn't tension so much as it was a prelude to war. But definitely after Adonai was killed, and Obi-Wan and Master Jin had to split up.
The Duchess needs supporters, allies, from outside the new Mandalorians,
Qui-Gon had said, wrapping warm fingers around Obi-Wan's shoulder.
You go with her. She trusts you. I'll stay here. Try to settle the rest of the faction. You should leave that with me,
Qui-Gon had said, pointing to Obi-Wan's lightsaber.
It's dangerous to be a Jedi where you're going. I'm loath to take it from you,
Qui-Gon had said, pocketing Obi-Wan's lightsaber regardless, and Obi-Wan. It had taken every bit of hard-won serenity Obi-Wan had not to retort.
You didn't seem to have a problem with taking it from me on Melodidon.
Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon have gotten past what happened on Melodidon. Mostly. Kind of. Anyways. He'd known he was maybe going to die on Mandalore. He just didn't think it was going to happen like this. He thought, when he saw Death Watch dragging Jango towards the compound gates, that he'd pretend to be a true Mandalorian commando and distract them long enough for the actual true Mandalorians to jump in and extract Jango. And then when the true Mandalorians instead ran off to protect the children, he thought there'd be chances to break himself and Jango free during the journey to Death Watch's camp. He wasn't counting on his ribs. He wasn't counting on the sedatives. He wasn't counting on the glimpse of Satine's face he caught in the shadows, the horror and fear he saw there, and what he realized she was thinking. If Jango and Miles, Obi-Wan's soulmates, were ready to kill him when they found out he's a Jedi, Death Watch won't hesitate, and he's in no condition to execute the type of swift, overwhelming attack he'd need to turn the tides in his favor if they do find out, much less while extracting the chained-up Jango, who might still try to kill him the instant he's within grabbing range or the instant they get out. His training bond with Qui-Gon is a tenuous, frail thing That's not good for much beyond general emotional state when they're this far apart. And Obi-Wan's been broadcasting some level of distress for almost the whole time he and Satine have been on the run. Qui-Gon has no way of knowing that anything new is wrong, has no way of knowing how far the situation is devolved. Obi-Wan is on his own, surrounded by beings who want him dead and out of options. The best thing he can do, the only way he can continue to serve a purpose, is to survive long enough and draw enough of Death Watch's ire that they leave Jango in one piece. Jango will figure out an escape route at some point, or Miles will come for him. And when that happens, when Jango is free, perhaps he'll feel that he owes some sort of debt for Obi-Wan's death and be willing to speak with Satine. It's manipulative of Obi-Wan to hope for that, he knows, and the guilt eats at him. But otherwise, all of this was for nothing, and he can't believe that the Force would have bothered leading him to Jango and Miles unless there was a point to the whole thing. A point to his painful, slow, lonely death, while one of his soulmates watches impassively from the next cage over. The whip comes down again, and again, and again. Jango is not impressed that the Jedi hasn't broken. He's not. He's not impressed, and he's not worried about the damage being done to the Jedi's internal organs, and he's not a little bit turned on by how every time Kirtzad puts him on the ground, he gets back up. Just to his knees, now. He can't seem to make it all the way to his feet, but he straightens his back and sets his shoulders and looks up at them defiantly and says something goading, something baiting, something clever. Yes, the Jedi's Mando Karla. Jango can see that. It doesn't mean that he's impressed. It's practical for Jango to try to see if the Jedi's still alive or maybe going to die overnight. Jango needs to know what he's working with. Hey, Jedi. No response. Their cages are next to each other, not close enough to touch, even if both Jango and the Jedi were reaching through the bars. But close enough that Jango has a good visual. The Jedi's breathing, albeit shallowly and unevenly. He's bleeding from a lot of places. There were knives before the whip today. The bruises from yesterday's pipes, blaster butts, and what Jango's pretty sure was a sack of rocks are all awful to look at, blooming darker and darker under the Jedi's pale skin by the minute. If Jango were a good person, he'd tell those Kirtzad jackasses that the Jedi is a Jedi, and that'd be the end of it. They'd kill him quickly. The suffering would be over. But Jango is not a good person, and the Jedi is a Jedi. And he'd criffing volunteered for this, basically, back at the compound. So why is it any concern of Jango's if he... It's not. It's not Jango's concern. Hey. Hey, Jedi. Wake up. Jango's insistence earns him a groan that quickly turns into a whimper of pain, which is just as quickly suppressed. Ben, Obi-Wan, the Jedi, sets his knuckles against the dirt floor between the bars of his cage and tries to press himself upright, only to collapse with a stifled yelp an instant later. "Your arm's broken," Jango says helpfully. He's expecting a snarky response, given how the Jedi's been reacting to their captors, but there is none. The Jedi rolls slowly from his stomach, where he'd landed when the Death Watch commandos tossed him into his cage and left them alone in this tent, to his side, lets out a sound like a wounded animal, and struggles to sit up quickly to alleviate pressure on whatever injury he just aggravated. Moron. "Why aren't you using your magic to..." "The Force isn't magic," the Jedi says, words sounding worn with repetition despite being broken up between pants for air. "And our captors' hospitality will surely run out the instant they realize I'm a Jedi." Hospitality. Despite himself, Jango has to hold back a snort. "You were handling yourself just fine in that alley when Miles and I caught up with you. You could take them, especially if you're using your not magic. The Jedi's smile is a wry, mirthless thing that warps his pretty, bruised face.
Unfortunately, I am not at my best right now, and unable to sustain multiple applications of the Force at once.
Django takes a minute to puzzle that one out.
You're already using the Force for something. Calling for help, or
keeping my ribs from puncturing my lungs,
Kenobi says, flat. He tucks his right hand up towards the ribs on that side, very near to where Jango's lie is carved into his skin, wincing at the motion. Some of the whip marks wrap around that far from where their captors had been sloppy. Kenobi is the wrong side of thin, the skinny, starved look that comes from months, if not longer, of lacking proper meals. Django'd known that already, had run his hands up and down that chest back at the compound, had already been daydreaming about finding out his new soulmate's favorite foods and making sure they were always on hand. But it's a bleaker, more stark picture here in this poorly lit tent. It's easy to make out the patch of Kenobi's ribcage that doesn't look quite right. Miles had muttered something about cracked ribs when they were getting then Ben and Satine settled into their rooms, and Django's watched Kenobi take dozens of harsh blows to the chest over the past 2 days, and that whipping.
If I have to use the Force to fight, I won't be able to keep my ribs in place, Kenobi says, and I'm not in good enough shape right now to fight without the Force. I'd lose badly. And they'd probably kick my ribs through my lung for fun at that point, anyway.
Django's not sure what look crosses over his face. Isn't even sure what he's feeling, to be honest. But he must not look happy. He's not. He knows that much. Because Kenobi keeps talking, trying to soothe him.
It's nothing to trouble yourself over, the Jedi says, words slightly stronger now. I'm not skilled enough to maintain a stable application of the Force while asleep or unconscious. Eventually, I'll be too tired to stay awake, or our generous host will do something that causes me to pass out. My ribs will pierce my lungs, I'll suffocate, and you and your redeur will be free of me. I'll try to draw it out to give you a better chance of surviving.
Django doesn't. It's curious, Kenobi continues, starting to slur his words around the edges. He's swaying where he sits.
That the universe thought I'd need to be your soulmate to get me here as a distraction for the Kurt Zod, so Miles has time to catch up and break you out. Would have gotten myself captured for you anyway. Didn't need to be soulmates. Suppose that was the point, though.
Django spits a question between gritted teeth. He shouldn't care about Kenobi, shouldn't care about the existential crisis happening 6 feet away. But hearing the Jedi talk so dispassionately about his impending death and how it will serve Jango is off-putting. What was the point?
Jedi aren't supposed to have soulmates. Attachments, you know. So when you and Miles, I'm either not supposed to be a Jedi, or I'm not going to live long enough for it to matter.
Kenobi chuckles, the sound low and wet.
Thought you'd be the one to kill me, of course. But it's not like I have a great track record for interpreting the will of the Force. Although,
he lolls his head sideways, too loose on his neck, fixing Django with a piercing stare from dull blue-gray eyes.
Would you kill me?
The answer should be an unequivocal yes. Kenobi is a Jedi, and Django is a true Mandalorian. Galadron. Django was going to kill Kenobi at the compound when he told them his real identity. He'd been reaching for Kenobi's throat. The only way to beat a Force user is to get inside their guard and on tack with unhesitating ruthlessness. Django has learned this through experience. He wasn't going to give Kenobi a chance to hurt Miles, to hurt the other Mandalorians in the compound, to hurt the Foundlings. He was going to kill him. It shouldn't be different now. Yes, Kenobi's their soulmate. And yes, Kenobi's been letting himself get tortured for 2 days to spare Django. But Django didn't ask him to do that, and...
Ah, Kenobi says,
once again reading something on Django's face that Django himself can't put words to. He turns his own face forward again, seems to shrink into his bones a bit more.
No, you wouldn't. Django, you wouldn't want to grant me the mercy of a quick death at your hands, Kenobi says. Probably why you haven't told the Kurtzad about me, either. Well, I understand. What my people have done to yours, I do wish it wouldn't come at the cost of my prolonged, painful death. But if seeing me suffer helps you, then...
Stop, Django says. Kenobi does, the words evaporating on his tongue. He rolls his head towards Django again and blinks a few times, owl-like.
Whatever you're trying to do, Django says. This getting captured, getting tortured, talking like you're okay with getting killed. It's not going to work.
Oh, it will work, Kenobi says.
He smiles that awful rictus of a smile again, and a thin line of blood dribbles out of the corner of his mouth.
I'm quite good at being irritating, and the Kurtzad at holding us are one, maybe two sessions away from losing patience with me. How long do you think Miles needs? I'll delay as best I can. Although, again, once I lose consciousness, it will be out of my hands.
Stop. Django's heart is racing, pounding. I know this is a trap, somehow. That you're trying to get in my good graces, or...
Do you have good graces? What Jedi are concerned?
Kenobi doesn't sound sarcastic, just genuinely curious.
Corking, stop it! Django snarls. You can't possibly think so little of yourself that you'd be willing to die for me. You don't know me.
I'd die for a great many beings I don't know, Kenobi says mildly. All life is sacred, and it's the duty of a Jedi to...
The Jedi slaughtered my people on Galadron. Don't tell me you think all life is sacred.
Django spits the words like they're poison. But Kenobi doesn't flinch away. Instead, understanding dawns across his dangerously pale face. How much blood has he lost?
Ah, I had wondered. Yes. Galadron. Perhaps the gravest mistake the Jedi have made since the Sith Wars.
Django bristles at it being boiled down to a simple mistake, but Kenobi's going on before he can marshal his thoughts into spoken sentences.
The Order was lied to. And due diligence was not done, and your people suffer the horrific consequences. The Jedi owe a debt that can never be fully repaid. I am sorry, Django Fett.
Django's never actually heard a Jedi acknowledge that they criffed up, is the thing. About Galadron, or about anything. It's all the will of the Force this, and the mysterious ways of the Force that. No accountability at all. And an apology doesn't help. And apology doesn't fix anything. But Kenobi... Kenobi wasn't even there, was he? The math, simple. Galadron was 14 years ago, and Kenobi's 20 standard, if that. The Jedi take their children into the field young sometimes, but Django thinks he'd remember if there'd been a carking 6-year-old on the battlefield. Kenobi wasn't there. Didn't have anything to do with that clusterfuck, and yet here he sits, apologizing with such sincerity that Django knows he won't find those words on his skin later. What sort of person apologizes for atrocities that aren't his fault and is willing to die for people he doesn't know? Kenobi struggles with his limbs while Django spirals, ending up with his hands in his lap, elbow of the broken arm pinned tight to his chest. One ankle beneath him, and the other propped out at an angle. There's something wrong with the knee of that leg, Django knows. The position doesn't look comfortable at all, but the Jedi settles into it and looks over at Django once again.
May I ask a favor?
A favor. A favor. It's all Django can do not to break into laughter. He doesn't trust himself to speak, so he doesn't. The Jedi takes his silence as a willingness to listen, which Django supposes it is.
When I die, there's... My master's here, too, on Mandalore. Jedi Master Qui-Gon Jinn. He'll feel it when I die, and he's lost Padawans before. Could you send a message? Perhaps relay through the Jedi Temple on Coruscant, so you needn't trouble yourself finding Master Jin's comm code to let him know how I died. The only reason he took me on in the first place was because I was willing to blow myself up on Bandomir and... What?
What?
Django doesn't know much about Jedi younglings, but he knows they get picked by their teachers at, like, 11 or 12 standard.
Jin picked Kenobi because... I worry he'll be troubled if he feels another Padawan failed him. But if he knows I died for this, for you, for the future of Mandalore, he'll still be disappointed with me, as he was on Melit at Dawn.
No. Kark, no. There's no karking. Mandalore's across the galaxy from the planet now known as Melidon, but stories that tragic have a way of spreading, if only as precautionary tales. Embroiled in civil war for centuries, a failed Jedi intervention roughly 5 years ago, a new faction of children from both sides determined to end the fighting. Django and Miles had only just escaped slavery, were still scraping themselves and the remnants of the true Mandalorians back together. But he remembers hearing about it and wishing he could help, promised himself that he would help as soon as he could. And then, a year later, word spread of a ratified peace treaty and a plan to rebuild. Negotiations were led by those children, who called themselves the Young, and one of their leaders left with the Jedi who came to oversee the ratification. Was Kenobi... But perhaps he'll find some measure of peace, knowing that I finally... Django, are you all right?
No, Django is not all right. Django is feeling sympathy for a Jedi, and not a single word Kenobi said has scarred.
I apologize. I'm disturbing you, Kenobi says. Which, yes, that's true. Django is pretty karking disturbed right about now. I'll leave you to your thoughts.
He folds his hands together, takes a deep breath, coughs on it immediately, blood speckling the ground in front of him, takes a shallower one, and settles into, what, is that meditation? Is now really the time for it? Django knows that Jedi use meditation to center themselves or whatever, but this still seems like a wild time to voluntarily be anything other than fully alert and aware of their surroundings.
Fine.
Fine. Django will just have to be aware of their surroundings for the both of them. Not because he cares if the Jedi dies, obviously not, but... Django carefully truncates the thought. He puts one eye on the tent flap, one eye on the Jedi's barely moving chest. The scar of his father's name is distorted, swollen atop the pooled blood of a bruise, and waits. They have a lead. It's a decent lead, as these things go. Kreese thinks the Kirt Zod who took Django and Obi-Wan headed west through Kadabe, and there's a Tingler restaurant on that edge of the city whose owner says a group in Death Watch colors came hustling down the street 2 days ago. One of the restaurant's workers says she heard a commando muttering something about just needing to hold him at the canyon camp until Vizsla was back on planet at the end of the week. It could be a trap. Miles is aware that it could be a trap. A Death Watch commando mentioning details like that out in the open, where anyone could hear? It's either a trap, or it's shitty operational security, or... There have been whispers about, not dissent, not exactly, but dissatisfaction among the clans that support Vizsla. Whispers that perhaps not everyone is marching in as tight of a lockstep as Vizsla would have the rest of the galaxy believe. There are some who don't like his tactics, his goals. They follow Pre because he has the Darksaber, but his claim is undermined by the fact that he didn't win it in combat. It just passed to him after Django killed Tor, and there are some who are starting to question if that's enough. So yeah, Miles doesn't know for sure, could still be a trap. But if he were a displeased member of Death Watch who was maybe interested in considering new management, and he happened to be put on the strike team that captured Jango Fett, who has the next best claim to the Darksaber, who killed the previous holder of it, child of the famed Jaster Muriel. Maybe he, too, would let a couple of nuggets of information slip within hearing distance of a shop whose owner was
low-key known to be unofficially allied with the true Mandalorians. Miles has made some riskier gambles on worse information, that's for sure. So he tightens his grip around the speeder's handles, signals a course adjustment to the five commandos with him, when his helmet's map suggests approaching the only known Kirtzad camp near Karad Canyon from the north, and wills himself, Jango, and their Jedi soulmate to stay alive through the coming battle. He just has some questions for their Jedi. That's all. He's not already attached. He hasn't already talked himself mostly past the problem of the man being a Jedi. He hasn't been mentally replaying clips of the man fighting, the man arching under Jango's touch, the man sacrificing himself for Jango, in his head for half the speeder ride. He hasn't idly daydreamed about he and Jango pinning their Jedi between them. Certainly not. He should probably stop referring to the man as their Jedi. One thing at a time, he tells himself as the outskirts of the camp come into view. First, the hunt, and then, one thing at a time, Miles. Oh, yeah.